So this evening, the exploration is around the quote that went out in the invitation. And this is a theme we've been exploring, I think, actually in the past month, in both the BIPOC sit and the social activist sit. And that is, we talked about Master Lin Chi and his encouragement to not take things as they appear. And so the quote in that went out for the announcement was something similar, right? If you see me, this is from the Diamond That Cuts Through Illusion, which is the heart, the Prajnaparamita Sutra, which in Mahayana tradition, as some of you may know, is sort of one of the core heart sutra, one of the core teachings, a very deep teaching. And I feel, I know I certainly had to go through it many, many, many times to still needing to go through it many times. So it's a very deep teaching. And so this phrase comes out of one of the translations by Thich Nhat Hanh, the one that was shared in for BBMC, which is, if you see me in form and you see hear me in sound, be careful. It's not me, it's not the path. And the Tathagata meaning the awakened nature of being. And so if we're seeing this awakened nature in some form, or if we're hearing it in some sound, be wary. And so this phrase kind of gets into one of the doors of liberation. So some of you may know there's in Buddhism we talk about the three doors of liberation. There's a lot of, we've had this discussion before. There's like four noble truths, noble eightfold path, seven factors of awakening. Pick a number and there is a like that, right? And so there's, of course, the three doors of liberation. And so we, last week, we explored emptiness a bit. So emptiness is the first door of liberation in this configuration of these three doors of liberation. And so the second door of liberation is signlessness. And the third is aimlessness. And so this one, this quote from the Diamond Sutra, is connected to both emptiness and signlessness. So this idea that if you see me in form as a sign, right, like the form being the sign, and you're not really seeing the truth. Because this whole nature of signlessness is there is no sign. And if we name it and stamp it with this label, then we get locked in and we get attached. And in that attachment, and then we follow it, and then we can't be flexible. And anything that goes beyond it is wrong. And then we get into right and wrong, and we get stuck on ideology and like that, right? And so this whole understanding of signlessness is don't get caught in the form. Because if you do, you're not on the path. And so it's a really nice connection to emptiness, because emptiness is also not getting stuck in this idea of the self, there's just this thing, right? And so being able to see that this thing that we have labeled, whatever thing, pencil, cloud, rose, is not that, it's empty of that nature of that thing, but it has multiple natures of many things. And so that it's empty. And if we get, it's another thing of this attachment to this one thing, emptiness, it's empty of a particular self nature. And the signlessness is it. There is no sign. If you see sign and you no, don't do it. Don't go there. And so this is, it's a really deep teaching, because it's a lot. It has a lot to do with why we suffer, as well, is getting attached to this sense of a self and getting attached to a sign and following that sign. And then when the sign doesn't naturally take us to where it said it would, then we suffer. We suffer so much. And this has to do with things as personal as love. And someone, when we fall in love, you know, there's a saying, I really enjoyed this first time I heard this, Thich Nhat Hanh say this. He says, you never wonder why they say fall in love, because you fall. You really actually fall into something. And it, you know, the first time I heard it, I was like, oh, wow, yeah, that's so true. You really do fall on top of your head, don't you? I mean, it doesn't always have to be that, and often it is that, because we fall into love of something that we need to be for us to love at that time. Like, we need this caricature of this person. And so we fall in love with that, and we even forget to notice and explore what is that person really, because we've fallen in love what we need. And then when we continue the relationship and that person just doesn't show up in that way anymore, then we suffer, and then we blame them, and we are like, you told me you were like this, and they didn't really tell us that they were that way. We needed them to be that way for what we were seeking at that time. And so it's that, that's the signlessness nature, right? Is we ascribe things to forms and sounds and all kinds of things that we need, and we get attached. And then when it changes, we suffer. And this is the whole teaching, right? Is how do we learn how not to do these things over and over again so we don't keep suffering? And so this, it's this ability to stay open and spacious and not grasp tightly, and to, you know, hold, but don't hold like this. So one can hold something and still continue to be in connection with it, but it doesn't mean that one has to hold it so tightly that it binds it. Because that's the attachment, and that's the not letting go. That's the non-releasing. That's the, you know, not, it's not just this attachment and tightness and holding that we have external. We also do it in our bodies. So the whole meditation today around this openness, this spaciousness in the areas of our body. So the way we hold tension in our bodies, it's also this tightness, right? It's like a clinging to something. It's like a holding on that causes pain. And sometimes we can manage to move that around and open that. And when that starts to get open and released, it's also a non-attachment anymore. And one can then begin to feel some lightness in that. And it doesn't mean it just happens because we start to meditate and try to be with the breath near that. It means it can take years, you know, because we don't know how long we've been holding on to perceptions of things that's been causing us suffering. For maybe a month or maybe a lifetime. And maybe it's not even ours. Maybe we're holding on to an ancestor's perception of pain. And maybe we're holding on to the collective consciousness of what's happening now. And so this practice, right, it's this noting, this stopping, this pausing, this seeing, this mindfulness, this staying present for the moment. What's there right now? What am I really seeing? Is it my perception? Am I putting a label on that that I need? What else is there besides what I need in this moment? And this is what mindfulness allows. So like earlier when we're stepping, like, can we be with that step just in that moment? And right in that moment, there's this moment of awakeness. So yesterday, I was in the park with my mom. So we kind of have this running joke. When I come, I drag her to the park with me. I don't really drag her. I just coerce her to go to the park. It's good to be outside, and exercise is wonderful. And so the last few times I've been here, we've gone to the park together, and there's a 2-mile loop in this park. And so we'll walk half mile together and a half mile back. And then she'll sit in the car and I'll go back and do some more, maybe go around again or go make the full loop. So yesterday we went and we're about at that half mile mark. And, you know, my mom's like, "We're not there yet. We're not there yet." And I said, "Oh yeah, we're here now. In fact, we just passed it." And she said, "Yeah, I'm wondering where the car is." And I said, "Well, we have to turn around and go back. Remember, like, it's half here." And I said, "Well, how do you feel?" And she said, "I feel good." I didn't know that she had eaten half a pie that I brought. So she had a lot of energy. But I didn't realize that that's why she felt good, because she had a lot of energy, right? Because she has really painful knees from arthritis. And is unsteady. So I was so impressed. I said, "Well, let's walk some more then, because you have so much energy. I've never seen you like this before." And so we walked too far where we get to a mile, right? So when you get to the mile, you either keep moving around the loop or you come back. But I told her, I said, "You know, if we keep going, we get to that halfway point, and then we can just go around the whole thing." She doesn't say anything, so we keep walking. I'm just impressed that she can do all this. And then we get to the mile, and I said, "You know, we can turn back and go the same way, or we can just finish the loop." "Oh, okay." So we're going, and like at a mile and a quarter, my mom's like, "Why, where's the car?" And I said, "Well, we still have this, we have to finish the loop," because I said, "You know, you can sit down, I'll go get the car, you know." And then I said, "You don't understand that we're now in 2 miles, right? Like, we finish, you know." And then she becomes aware, and then I'm bad because I fooled her and misled her, and I'm trying to kill her also, all these things. And so then she starts kind of staggering, like. And so then I get all upset and concerned. So I grab her and I'm like, "I think I should just hold on to you." Now, my mother is very stubborn. She's an immigrant. There's something about immigrant selection, as you all know, some of you may know. And so she'll die before she gets picked up by the car. I realized this more last night. And so I'm holding her really tight. And I'm like, "What if she has a heart attack? You know, like, what if she falls down? You know," and like all this stuff's coming out. And I'm like, "Oh, like, did I mislead her?" And she's been cursing me out a little bit. My mom does have some of those nice choice words. As I said, I learned it legally. And then all of a sudden I'm holding her and I'm feeling her body leaning against me, and all of a sudden I got filled up with so much joy, and I thought, "Wow, I'm walking with my mom, and I'm holding her tight, and I think it's the first time I felt like she was relying on me, like actually needed me." And it was so special. It just, like, everything evaporated, all the worry, all the tightness, and I just walked with her, like, just kept walking with her. And then we saw 3 rabbits, and then, you know, like these little cute bunny rabbits, and I'm like, "Look, little bunny rabbits." And she's like, "Yeah." I'm not gonna say the entire rest of the walk was like that, because it wasn't, but there was, for like moments, minutes, where I was fully present with this person that I love, and I could drop all these external worries and internal worries and be, and I can't describe how, like, I got it. It was there. It was like, wow, this is what that means, to just be fully present right here, right now, nothing else. And it doesn't mean she couldn't fall down and have the heart attack and all that. It wasn't like that. It was like an ability to be present and really feel into what was there. And also anything else could happen too. But it wasn't just this looming, you know, all bad stuff. Okay, so this long story is to say, this is what our practice is, right? So when we say, there is no path to peace, peace is the path. There is no way to peace, peace is the way. This is it right here. It's like every day in the very moment, as we're doing things, as we're like, you know, quarreling with our mom because they felt misled, there's something else there too. There's like feeling and dropping into this whole other set of emotions that are there that gets pushed away or repressed or forgotten because we get so taken up. And that's what happened was right there was this moment of awakening. And right there, I felt fully present and realized what it meant to really be with love with someone, to just be there and be holding them and care and not even wishing good, not even wishing bad, just being present for the moment. And then other things manifest out of that, like these bunny rabbits. I'm like, what's up with those bunny rabbits? You know, like they're so cute hopping around, you know, and we stop and watch. And so what else can come out of these moments of awareness, right? When we wake up. And this is what Thich Nhat Hanh always talks about, you know, over and over again. Can we be fully present to the moment? Can we not see that we're on a path to get to the moment, but see that the path is right there in this moment? Because that's what it is. That's what mindfulness does, is it allows us to, in that moment, drop right back into it. And even though we get pulled out again, the next breath brings us back in. And the next breath, we get pulled out. And the next breath brings us back in. And the more we practice, the more often we get pulled back into that moment of awareness. And we move away from more forgetfulness and we move into more remembering, right? So the piece of this that I think is so appropriate, well, it's always appropriate to figure out how to be present. But right now we're going through a lot of turmoil in our society. There's a lot of stuff going on, right? Just politically, things are getting pushed back. You know, the way we're understanding racial equity is getting challenged. You know, all these ways we thought we were moving forward, gender norms, now we're, and the pushback is coming in ways that, can bring despair. I mean, at least this is what I'm feeling and sensing around me, is a lot of despondency, a lot of, I knew we couldn't last, you know, they're always in power. This kind of forgetting, the forgetfulness part, right? The not remembering we do have these wins. No, we did do this. And yes, this is going on too. This is real, right? Roe versus Wade, this is not unreal. This is very real. Its effect on female embodied people, the effect on BIPOC female embodied people, effect on BIPOC, poor female, I mean, it goes on, right? This isn't just like, oh, it's a cool law. No, this is like a law that can distinguish between life and death for people, for fetuses, right? For people who want to have a choice. And so how do we, in the moment of these big despairs, how do we remember that it's not just that? that there's still these moments that we are here. We have gone through these things. We've made steps forward. And how do we take a next step, right? Like, it's in these moments that we can't we always put effort in long-term sustainable movements, of course. And there are times when we have to take up the very moment that we're in. These are some of those times right now, because if we get overwhelmed with what is on our plates now, we lose this moment, as well as not having the energy and the wherewithal to plan for the long sustaining movement, right? But right now, when there's so much chaos about how do we remember that there is more to it than what the media is trying to convince us that we're at, and oh, we're being pushed back to, and is it really all that, or is it just sensationalism that tries to really muck about with news so that we watch and we get anxiety, and when we get anxiety we watch more because we want our anxiety to be appeased, so we want people to appease us, and so we watch more, and they don't do that. You know, it's like when you watch hurricanes that are coming or storms, right, especially in New Orleans, they're always trying to scare you, you know, with the water and the flooding. And we have a lot of anxiety. And so we go there to get more information, but all they do is they feed the anxiety. So that's what the media does, right? It feeds our anxiety. But then the feeding of our anxiety, it makes us want to go back to hear of the possibility of change. But they won't give us that, because that's not their role. Their role is to make sure we keep coming back. And if we don't come back, they don't do their work. But part of not coming back is being steady enough, being clear enough to also see what else is there. So we don't need to go back and take up that nonsense that is being fed to us, right? That we find the outlets we need to nourish our understanding of what's happening without taking us into these zones of anxiety and despair and despondency and depression and hopelessness. Because we're coming off with still in this wave of COVID and all these things. And then there just is these, you know. So how do we not go into despair? Part of this is coming back to practice. Part of this is remembering how to be present for not just all the difficulty, but what else is there, right? So with my mom yesterday, and my freaking out that I actually was going to kill her because I brought her out on this 2-mile walk, poor woman. And then also like just being present and seeing what else was there besides that. And also noticing how the mind wants to go back to the, you know, oh my God, you know, maybe I should have her sit down, make her sit down. Go, you know, get the car, and just instead of trying to be nourished by what else is there. So the signs and our ability to not just go by what we've been used to being told is this, right? And being able to see that it's more than just that. This is part of the practice that mindfulness helps us come to understand better. So I'm going to stop there. I think we'll touch on aimlessness probably in another on another Sunday. And also the talk from last week on emptiness, the Sunday talks have been recorded, so they don't go up immediately. It'll probably go up like in another week or so. So everyone can listen to it as they like. Yeah. So we'll stop there and invite a bell for us to just take some breaths together. Thank you for listening.